Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Party Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're here for another week of looking at the world through conservative eyes. Not conservative eyes as if there's a limit to the edges, a filter on what is going on, but with conservative eyes looking at how does this affect our liberty? How does this affect our freedom? Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Tracy. How are you?
I'm in a mood.
Uh-oh. Look out, folks. Here it comes.
But I can't tell you what that mood is.
Oh, okay.
I've been sitting here waiting for the show to start with a piece of paper in front of me, blank, nothing on it, going, Not because there isn't lots of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
As you have suggested in the past, we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about all the stuff that's going on.
Absolutely.
And of course, usually we start off with little, such, you know, inane little banter about this or that,
yeah.
The weather or golf.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I have a thought that this show should be about conversations.
Yes, absolutely.
We want to have a conversation about what's going on. And this is the example that I have for you. When a new client comes into the office, there's a certain amount of information that I need from them in order to prepare for them to meet with Victoria.
Okay.
Now, there are two ways to get that information. Now, I've asked them before they come to gather up a lot of information, put it together.
Mm-hmm.
I can either ask them in a way that is interrogating. Give me the answer to that. Or I can have a conversation with them in which all of those answers that I'm looking for will be part of the response.
Yes.
And generally speaking, that's how I prefer to deal with people on a much more, it's a much more personable way
mm-hmm.
of approaching things.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I am asking for a lot of information, but it's also designed to put people at ease. They're very nervous when they come into the office.
Of course.
You know, and I want them to feel, you know, that they're not going to get this big hammer come down on their heads. But there are things that are going on in the world that need big hammers.
Mm.
But you're not one of them. And generally speaking, neither are the people that we are talking to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have talked a little bit, kind of throwing out at the end because it gets left to the end, about the issue with little green footballs and, you know, this issue with parts of the conservative base really going after itself.
Yes. Yep.
And it is not unusual. And I'm going to use this because, you know, people are going to think that this is weird, but it is not unusual for a pack of dogs, a pack of wolves that are hunting, that when they're in the process of chasing down prey, nipping at each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. it's not designed to interfere with the process. It's just to say, hey, me too.
Yeah.
Give me a little space.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think some of this nipping that's going on the conservative side is more about give me the front.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be there first. And I'm beginning to have bigger problems with the nipping that's going on because it's distracting.
Yeah. Yep.
And one of the things that went on last night, for anybody that was on Twitter, last night there were tens of thousands of Twitters going on last night about getting a hold of Olympia Snow, getting a hold of the senators on the finance thing, and
mm-hmm.
just blasting them with emails and Twitters and faxes and phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, all day today I was thinking, you know, if I was Olympia Snow, and I walked into my office this morning and there was a pile of paper at the bottom of the fax machine, and the phone system was practically inoperable because it was packed with phone messages.
Mm-hmm.
And the email accounts were bouncing because there was so much stuff in there. And I realized that 99.9% of all of that came from people that were not my constituents. I would get a big garbage bag and just dump it all.
Really?
Certainly.
Hmm.
Because you know what? The only people that Olympia Snow represents are the people of Maine. Right? Maine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And until she's voting on something that affects all of us.
But all she has to answer to are the people in Maine.
That's true.
And in the end, if her constituency supports health care reform,
mm-hmm.
then she is doing what she's supposed to do and vote for it.
Okay, as far as that goes, yeah.
Right. We have talked about the idea that there's a place where our elected officials need to act upon principle even in the face of popular disapproval.
Mm-hmm. Even beyond that, money is fungible, and what that says is, okay, I'm not in your district, but you know what? I can certainly donate, and I can certainly phone bank for anybody that opposes you. That's the practical matter.
And my opinion is that if I were Olympia Snow and that was the situation,
mm-hmm.
that the response would have provoked. If in fact my constituency was, you know, in support, it would absolutely
mm-hmm.
result in the opposite for me. You know me.
Yeah.
You know, you tweak me, and you're likely to get me coming back at you pretty hard.
That's fine.
So I was kind of not put off by, but I thought in the end it was nipping at the heels.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because I really don't think in the end she was going to do anything but vote for it.
Well, but that doesn't mean that folks ought to stop trying to change her mind and point out to her the consequences of that.
Let me give you
a for instance.
Okay.
I am in the process of composing an email to the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, to the National Republican Committee, and saying, folks, you get not one single solitary dime of my money if you support Olympia Snow. Not one penny. I will donate, but I will donate to conservative candidates.
Well, there's certainly my opinion today is that, if the GOP suggests for a second that Olympia Snow is a Republican worthy of positions granted to her by the party leadership
mm-hmm.
because of her seniority or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point the GOP has to disavow her in
yeah.
such a way as to simply say, you know, you can certainly vote for whoever, vote whatever way your constituency and your conscience desires, but
yep.
it is clear that you do not ascribe to the Republican GOP principles espoused in this party, in its platforms and in its principles, and as long as that's true, we cannot in good conscience allow you to,
have a leadership position. Yep, that's
you
true.
You certainly, are welcome to join the Democrats or not,
mm-hmm.
but you're done, calling yourself a Republican as far as activities are concerned with the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
You're not invited.
Yeah, exactly.
And frankly, I don't see Michael Steele having more than a quarter of a ball towards that.
Yeah.
I
know
he will
trot out the tired old argument of Big Ten, and I'm saying Big Ten is fine as long as they're conservatives.
More and more, the Republican Party is proving over and over again why you and I and so many other people have joined the American Conservative Party.
Absolutely,
because the Republican Party is absolutely nuts.
Oh, yeah.
There's
yeah.
no way to sit there and say, well, the Republican Party stands for the principles that we stand for. Frankly, I can't imagine a principle that the Republican Party stands for that conservatives stand for at this point in time.
No. I know what's in their platform, and the platform sounds nice. And if they'd uphold it, that'd be great. But they don't. And so
right.
they become Democrat light.
Let's face it. The Republican Party is the party of family values. Abortion has been on the platform of the Republican Party for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the GOP has done anything. Now, everybody knows my position on abortion, but I can sit here and say, my position is such and such, but the Republican Party has had in its platform to oppose abortion for the last 30 years, and it has done nothing.
Exactly.
Gay activists, and God help me. Sorry, God. Sorry,
it's
Edna.
Okay. It's okay, God. It's just Tracy.
Yeah, I'm safe from lightning here.
Yeah, right.
Gay activists do more damage to the gay movement than anything else in the world.
Yep.
But, every argument, any time a Republican wants to get conservatives at least remotely interested, they bring up the gays are going to tear up our,
mm-hmm.
Exactly what has the GOP done to thwart the gay movement?
I haven't either, but frankly, both of those issues are issues that the National Republicans ought not to even be talking about.
Well, the problem
What's that?
They have been talking about it for 30 years and not doing anything about it.
Exactly. But my point, and you and I agree on this, is that, folks, those are state issues.
Right, state issues.
They are not national issues.
Get them off the platform. But the problem is, here's the problem. There's a very large segment of the conservative population who simply cannot be bothered about whether we wear seatbelts or not. The only thing that they care about is they don't want gays in the school, and they want abortion ended, and they are willing to accept Olympia Snow as long as she says she supports those positions for them.
Yeah, yeah. I think the latest example for me is this guy that is the safe school czar. Yeah. And, you know, I don't really have a problem at an age-appropriate level for discussions about homosexuality. I don't. Far better that that happened in the family, but I don't have a problem with it in the schools at an age-appropriate thing. According to his writings, he thinks kindergartners ought to be taught about homosexuality.
If
I were a homosexual, I'd be looking for that guy with the damn club.
Right. I'll beat him above the head and shoulders and go, "Are you fucking nuts?"
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Right. And that's my point. You know, gay activists do more damage to the gay movement than any conservative could ever do.
Exactly.
You know, because they do stupid stuff. And, of course, you know, leftists are leftists.
Yes, they are.
Okay? Leftists don't care about women's rights.
No, they don't. No.
They don't care about the children.
No.
They don't.
God.
They don't care about gays. They don't care about blacks. They don't care about minorities. They care about power.
And Tracy, let me tell you that I am coming to the conclusion that that is not limited to the left.
Politicians on the right are perfectly willing to ascribe to themselves as much power as they can get.
Exactly.
Pandering along the way. I agree with you.
Yep.
You know, politicians as a general category of human species, and I won't suggest what kind of species. it is clear that, power hungry pandering BS is certainly not limited to the left.
No. Nope.
But the left is proclaimed to be for those groups when, in fact, there's, every single time you get an example that, what was the most recent example?
Oh, well, the one that springs to my mind is the Muslim advisor to President Wiwi, who thinks Sharia law is just fine and ought to be copied here in the United States, and says that that's a liberating thing for women.
Oh, conversations about that in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
I've been having a rather interesting conversation with apparently a woman, apparently from Iran or Iraq, certainly from the Middle East, relatively eloquent as far as the English language is concerned, quite clear. She's very comfortable in the English language, who is quite insistent that my belief that we are free is a mind control trick, that I am actually enslaved by my freedoms and that I've been brainwashed into believing that they are actually freedoms.
Really?
So
she thinks it's perfectly fine that if she's raped, that it takes four men to testify that she was raped, and if she can't find four men, then she's punished for fornication. She thinks that's a great thing.
We didn't go there.
We were
more esoteric as far as our conversations are concerned.
I'm getting real tired of esoteric. I want to where the rubber meets the road. That's where the proof is of what does your policy actually do.
Right. She wanted examples where I said that her religion was very restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not interested in giving you examples because you will show me countries in which that event doesn't occur, and then you will equally show me that countries that it does occur are the minority rather than the majority of the.
I see.
And I'm sitting
okay,
like,
okay, fine.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I said the only illusion that's going on here is that you think the restrictions that you have self-imposed upon yourself in some way apply to me.
Yeah.
So it is this mind, you're right, it is the mindset that mm-hmm. what you want to see ended is free will. What you want to see ended is freedom.
Yes.
Individual liberties.
Yep.
Which
is anathema to a conservative.
Right. And every time you have a government, I don't care which government, including our own.
Yeah, yeah.
That seeks to limit choice in any way, what you've got is a government that is seeking to restrict our rights. I've said this. I haven't said it in a long time on the show. I'm going to say it again. Every law is a restriction on an individual right. And while you may agree that some of those restrictions are necessary, and I might agree with you that some of those restrictions are necessary, it is clear to me that the minimum number of restrictions should be the goal, not
the maximum.
The drawback point.
Right. Yeah. I agree. We toss that one around every once in a while, but I think you stated it just a little bit differently tonight, and that is, yes, every law that is passed is a restriction on liberty and on rights of some sort. Some of those are necessary, i.e. the law on murder, but the vast majority of them are simply a way to aggrandize power to somebody else.
And usually a pretty small group of somebody else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So, you know, we got into an argument in the last week about the Constitution, you know, providing rights again.
Yeah.
Please, the Constitution provides not one single right.
To anybody. Yep.
Nowhere in the whole Constitution that says, you shall have the right.
Nope.
Doesn't exist.
Nope.
Not there.
Isn't there.
All right. Conservatives, the point of all of this is, we are, as a group, I think, occasionally, losing sight of what's going on because we're too busy nipping at each other's heels.
That's true.
And the problem we have with healthcare reform right now, and this is another issue as far as Olympia Snow is concerned, that bill did not need Olympia Snow's vote.
Nope, sure didn't.
So
absolutely
even
did.
If everybody had gotten Olympia Snow to change her mind,
mm-hmm.
that vote today
mm-hmm.
would have resulted in exactly the same outcome.
Yep. And absent turning any Dems, yes, that's true.
It would have passed out of committee. You, I, and most of the people that are listening to this, and most of the people that we talk to on a day-to-day basis, are very cognizant of the fact that there is nothing we as conservatives can do to stop healthcare reform from being passed right now.
That's true.
I'm not suggesting we give up and roll over on this. Not
nope.
suggesting that. Okay? But I am suggesting that we are burning an extreme amount of energy, an extreme amount of enthusiasm on battles that can't be won.
When we Not at that committee level, that's true.
When we need to be spending time working on getting those battles that we can win dealt with.
Yes.
So, there are some things that I want to suggest that we need to do.
Cool.
Okay. First of all, if you haven't joined the American Conservative Party, at least on the website level as a registered member, please do so. Second, and this is something that I want that I haven't talked to anybody else about. My father, the patriarch of the family, and my little sister Elizabeth share the same birthday.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
The eldest and the youngest sharing the same birthday.
That's neat.
That birthday is coming up here
Ooh.
In about a month.
Okay.
November 11th.
Ooh.
Okay.
Armistice Day, for those who remember those things.
Or more commonly called Veterans Day.
Yes.
And I want every conservative, every single solitary conservative we can talk to in this country, okay, to donate $1. $1. To a veterans organization. I was going to suggest pick whichever one you want to do, but I think what we need to do is we need to specify one veterans organization that we think is doing wonderful work and needs the money to do more. I want us to kind of think about this for the next week or so and come up with one veterans group organization that could use a pretty nice inflow of cash. And on Veterans Day, I want every conservative to give $1 to that organization.
Let's clarify that just a little bit. Does it have to be a veterans organization such as Veterans of Foreign Wars or something like that, or can it be an organization whose primary mission is to help veterans? You got a preference?
I want it to go to organizations that are currently helping vets coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay.
So VFW, which is a perfectly wonderful organization, is a great organization, but I would like to have something more actively involved with vets today.
Yeah, and that's good. That's my preference also. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the same page here.
I had considered suggesting that we give $11.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But I think $1 is fine.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are considering that this is a thing and then kind of say, well, you know, I like that $11 thing, I'm going to find a list of 11 organizations and I'm going to give them each a dollar.
Cool.
But we, you and I, on this radio show, are going to please, all of you that are listening or hear about the show or the podcast, we'd like to hear your input over the next week to come up with an organization that everyone thinks is a really good organization for vets. I will spend some time talking about it with people and considering it, and I would hope that I'm assuming you will do the same.
Yep.
We will both talk to people and come up with an organization, and next week we are going to, you know, specify this is the organization we want everyone to give $1 to on Veterans Day.
And for those of you that are on Twitter that are listening right now, tweet that message out, would you? That'd help a bunch.
Okay. So, that's the first thing I want done. First thing I want done is I want us to remember exactly who's on the front lines of this fight.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, did you hear that, not to take away from this part of the conversation, I'm doing a little Kanye West here. I'm going to let you finish. But did you hear that the current occupant of the White House declared war?
On whom?
Yeah, he did.
No. On whom?
Well, it wasn't Afghanistan.
Oh, well, oh, okay.
And it wasn't Iraq or Iran. He declared war on Fox News.
Isn't that stupid?
I mean, you know, we've got two going on. How come you want to start a third one, you fool?
You know, we just talked about this a couple weeks ago.
I know.
Never start an argument with somebody that buys ink by the barrel.
By the barrel, that's right.
You know.
Okay.
Never start a fight with somebody that has, you know, free airwaves.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know. Because, of course,
Don't ever start a fight with a network that has the most viewers.
You know?
Stupidity abounds.
You know, in a fight between Rupert Murdoch and George Soros,
yeah,
I'm betting on Rupert.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Frankly.
Yep.
You know.
Incidentally, he may be in negotiations to buy CBS. Rupert, I'm talking about.
I think that would be a bad idea.
I don't know. I mean, couldn't you just see old Keith Overbite doing the janitorial duties around there?
No, we would never hear the end. About how they're trying to muzzle the news.
Oh, I know. Let's get back to the people that really matter.
Okay. So
let's talk about those men and women that are over there that are in fact in danger every day and night, that are protecting our liberties just because they're there.
Okay. That's the second issue.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that some people wanted to, you know, first of all, people, let's talk about the outpost that was overrun 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
We lost 8 troops in that thing.
Yep.
We have since pulled out that outpost. I have heard, and I, in fact, believe this, that they were planning on coming out of there anyway. However, the problem is that having done so after what happened, it looks like we cut and run.
Yes, it does.
And I think what should have happened at that point is that even for them to say, well, we were planning on being out of there anyways, but now we're going to drop, you know, 5, you know,
yep,
companies or a full battalion in there just to do a nice little sweep for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and turn those mountain hillsides into, you know, landslide rubbles. You know, so,
yep.
I would have liked to have seen that, but of course, you know, our current commander-in-chief couldn't think like that if he had his head out from between his butt cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wish that was there. In any case, one of the things that was said in some of the reporting was by one of the troops there was that nobody back home gave a shit.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's altogether really, really
not true.
Not true.
Yep.
But the question is, how do we – now – for that, and I know what happened, because once that started getting reported, I know that that battalion got inundated.
Oh, I'm sure.
It did. I've already heard back that that battalion has been inundated with good wishes and with care packages, to let them know that that's in fact not the case. Now, that might be the issue, is at this particular point in time, all of the things that we were doing for our troops in Iraq has in fact tapered off some. And Afghanistan, I hate to say this, God, please protect me twice. The lefties were, in fact, somewhat right about this. We, on the right, kind of ignored Afghanistan a little bit.
Yeah, we did.
because we needed a big emphasis on, making sure that we didn't cut and run in Iraq.
Yep.
Well, we need to reestablish the kind of consistent, constant barrage of good things that were going on in Iraq and refocus them
on
Afghanistan.
Yep. Absolutely.
I don't know how we need to do that, but we certainly
There's a lot of ways. One that I just saw on Twitter, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours or so ago, there is a site that you can send, no cost to you, you can send a postcard to troops in Afghanistan. And you put your own message in there. That's one place. I know there are others.
Okay. Let's work on that, too. Now, that's the focus on the people that are doing the bleeding.
Yep.
Because you and I, and I'm speaking about you, William,
yep,
and I abdicated our responsibilities over the last 20 years.
Yes, we did.
And they are there because we screwed up.
Yes, we did.
And so I want to make sure that we take care of that screwing up. Now, we as conservatives, you and I, many other people, have had an awakening over these last 2 years.
Yes.
And we're getting back on track and doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
Which is supervising our elected officials and our government.
Always remember, they work for us, not
this
vice versa.
Good. Right. This is a good thing.
Yes.
Okay. And part of that is we need to be prepared for what's going to start in just 4 short months. In some places, it's actually going to start in just a few short weeks. Election season is beginning.
Yes, it is.
There are a couple of elections going on in November, New Jersey being one.
And that one needs some help, folks.
Yeah, what's the other one?
Virginia.
Is it Virginia?
Virginia, McConnell and Creed Eads.
Okay. So we've got Virginia and New Jersey, both governorships that need some focus.
Yes.
Some attention paid to. And this is where some of that energy and some of that focus that was going on Olympia Snow that you suggest, money is fungible,
yes,
can be useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because instead of suggesting that Olympia Snow, if she doesn't behave, is going to lose money, and that maybe at some point in the future when we can find somebody that's actually going to, go against her, we're going to support them. Here we've got a couple of cases of people that can use the money today,
use
the support today, that's going to have an impact pretty much right away.
Right now. November 3rd
right now
is their election. I mean,
so,
that's what, 2.5 weeks?
2.5 weeks.
3 weeks, I guess, something like that.
Okay, so we need to do a little bit of focusing our energies on those things, which can have an immediate impact. And in fact, unlike Olympia Snow, who, if she actually did the right thing, wouldn't have changed the outcome.
Right.
Here, if we can do the right thing for the conservatives that are running, we can change outcomes for, you know,
yeah,
people in those states.
Yeah, exactly. And one other thing to remember about Olympia Snow. Her term isn't up until 2012. So there isn't anything anybody's going to do today, right now, today, next week, that's going to have any effect on her. We do have an opportunity with at least those two races. And I would suggest those folks who are listening, go to redstate.com. They have a list of conservative candidates. They're Republicans, but first and foremost, they're conservative. Find one, adopt them, and support them.
Right.
And if we all do that, we will make a difference.
Right. Because at this particular point in time, I think warning somebody we're not going to support them in the future is a waste of time and energy.
Yep. For right now.
If we get people right now that we can say, here's some support, you know, do it. Now, I have a hash on Twitter. It's called Give 10.
Yes, it is.
I use it on occasion. I simply do it. It's a no strings attached. I don't care what you do with it. It's irrelevant what it's for. I simply have occasionally the desire to simply give away $10.
Yep.
I don't give it to people for things. I don't give it to people because of things. I do it for me.
Yep.
It is my desire to do that at that time for whatever's going on in my little pretty head.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with anybody else. Okay. We as a group, I'm not telling you to do give tens, but we as a group need to pick, times and places that we are going to extend our influence. And it doesn't have to be, and this is going to frighten you, I know it's going to scare all of you people, at church on Sunday, yes, I go to church on a regular basis even, although we took a few months off for summer. We were back at church on Sunday, and I was listening to the sermon, and one of the things he said was that we need to be seen, and I took this, even though I'm nominally a member of the church, simply because they get tired of me sitting there flapping my jaws, telling them to do things without me actually being on the rolls. So they put me on the rolls even though I don't ask to be put on the rolls. I get put on the rolls. CJ and Victoria are members, and I'm a member by osmosis sometimes.
There you go.
Pastor said, we'll find a place for you. And I said, as long as it's in a chair not doing anything, I'll be happy.
There you go.
The point is, and most of you Christians will understand this, it's not what we say, it's what we do.
Absolutely. Rubber meets the road.
We need to do those things that show people that conservative principles have consequences.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to tell you give tens or anything else like that. But I want people to pay attention to the idea that conservative principles have consequences. And to make sure that when you interact with the world, it is that interaction has its foundation in conservative principles.
Yep.
People have asked me, this was Sunday at church. Well, you support our social justice program, right? And I went, no.
No.
And they said, well, how can you not support the social justice program? I said, define for me what you mean by social justice.
Yeah.
Well, people should have the right to. I went, ah, nah, nah, nah.
Yeah, back off there.
I said, people have the right. Go ahead. Well, people should. I went, ah, nah, nah, nah.
No, no, no.
People have the right. Not should. They, people have the right. Go ahead. I said, well, to have, you know, good housing. Going, ah, nah, 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 nah. That's not a right. And they said, I got into an argument. Five people standing around, you know, wanting to know why I didn't think that somebody having food in a house was a right. And I said, well, you know, as soon as you open up your door and let somebody else come in and take your house and you move out, then we can talk about rights. And, well, Look, I don't care about somebody calling me racist. I don't care about somebody calling me cold-hearted. I don't care about somebody calling me, you know, a dark-souled bitch. Don't care. Okay? Because my principal says that if you want to eat, then you should probably go ahead and figure out some way to find food.
Yep.
It is not my responsibility to feed you.
They have a right to seek.
Not in my cupboard, they don't.
Aha. And that's where that bumps up against your right belongs at the end of my nose. I mean, I think it's interesting. I've had discussions along those lines with people, and they invariably come back to and provide for the general welfare. You know? And it's like, well, wait a minute. First off, one of the writers of that, Thomas Jefferson, said that that was limited to the enumerated points in the Constitution.
Correct. And Madison said that it was not supposed to be used as an open door to provide everything and anything to everybody that wanted it.
Exactly. So that's an argument that fails. But unless you know that, unless you have actually read all of those people, you're going to get that argument thrown in your face, and you aren't going to know how to respond.
Right. Something else we need to do. People.
Oh, is this going to be my favorite E-word theme?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
We need to be better educated.
Yeah. There's my E-word.
One of the things that I think is one of the reasons I have a significant number of liberal followers, and I don't mean in my cult.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't know about the cult. That's over the other side. Anyway, I keep those separate.
Okay.
Liberal followers is the fact that I'm willing to engage. I don't need to run. I don't need to drop bombs and take off. I don't need to throw some snark and walk away from the conversation. I can stay engaged and stay involved because in the war of ideas, we have all the ammunition.
Yeah, we do.
Okay? They are bringing a slingshot to a, you know, sidewinder missile fight.
Yeah. Actually, the analogy that popped into my head was they're bringing sticks and stones against an M1 Abrams.
Yeah.
You know, it just like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. It's the Polish army against, you know.
Yeah. Against the German mechanized divisions, yeah.
So, you know, but, and you're right, we have to be educated from that.
Yes,
we
do.
We have to be. If you know, I've just read Glenn Beck's Common Sense.
Oh, great.
I've already read Paine's Common Sense.
And
Rights of Man. I did that quite a while ago. And I'm actually beginning to do some comparison as far as Beck is concerned, because I think he's actually gone off on a tangent on one or two places. I don't think it's bad that he's done so, but I actually want to be clear about how Paine said it before I suggest that Beck's tangent is too far afield.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a feeling at this point that he has done that rather than anything tangible. That's why I want to actually go back and kind of do them a little bit side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Not to suggest that what Beck was doing was a more current paraphrase of Thomas Paine. That's not what he was doing.
No.
Not what he's done in that book. But there are points that Paine made that I think are fundamental to the conservative way principles that I want to make sure that Beck is continuing to honor, if not in word, certainly in spirit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
that's fair.
Something I want to do. But I think it is important. Common Sense, people, is not long. I think it's about 65 pages.
Yeah, it's short. It can, short treatise.
It can easily be done in an evening, although, to be perfectly honest, the writers of those days tended to be extremely dense writers.
Yes, they did.
And I don't get much more than a paragraph without having to sit down and write notes and take comments and such like that.
So, and think about it. Yeah.
And think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's
brain exercise
that we need to do. If you have not read the Federalist Papers, you absolutely must read the Federalist Papers.
Must
if you are a constitutionalist, if you are somebody that stands for the Constitution, you must understand the Federalist Papers. You've got to pay attention to the arguments that are made there, because most of the arguments that we hear today from the left are arguments that those writers addressed specifically
and demolished. Yes.
And tore them to pieces.
Yeah.
Okay? There is nothing new, no argument that I have heard the left make in the last 2 years that was not addressed at one time or another in the Federalist Papers.
That's right.
And you have got to read them. You must read them.
Homework assignment tweets.
Homework assignment. You know, you have to read Common Sense. Jefferson read Common Sense. It was important for him to have done so. He and Paine didn't always agree on everything.
No, they didn't.
But, it was important for him that he said that it was vitally important for him in his thinking processes that went on. I strongly recommend John Stuart Mill's On Liberty,
mm-hmm.
an extremely dense, extremely fairly long. However, if you read chapter one, that's going to get you a significant portion of the concept of individual liberty, especially the individual sovereign concept that I am so consistently adamant about promoting,
mm-hmm.
and which is a fundamental principle of the American Conservative Party.
Yes.
It is something that is vitally important. Arm yourself with this information. It is certainly important to do so, so that when you walk into the conversations with leftists, you don't have to bomb them. You don't have to slice and dice. You can simply take their arguments, demolish them in a polite, consistent, educated, and well-thought-out way,
yep.
and turn every... I don't have debates with leftists to turn a leftist's mind around. I'm absolutely convinced every argument I have with a lefty is a complete and utter waste of time with regard to that specific lefty. I have those debates with those lefties so that everyone else listening and paying attention on the periphery
mm-hmm.
can hear those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
I want those arguments out there in the bigger group. So people that are on the border and want to hear the two sides get an opportunity to hear the two sides and make their own decision.
Mm-hmm.
So having a debate, yep. I don't need to win my debates with the lefties. Don't have to. It's not my goal. My goal is to make sure that all of their arguments have been rebutted and that all of my arguments have not been rebutted.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. so that anybody that sees or pays attention to those conversations, you know, can see that argument, both sides. Both sides.
Yep.
I want both
fair
sides.
And balanced.
You know, we kind of had this conversation. And this is, let's get into a little bit of religion, because I got into it on Sunday. I got into it with other people recently, too. And this is part of my mood issue. Okay? You cannot have sin without free will.
That's true.
God has given us the opportunity to make wrong choices.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, our choices are irrelevant unless we had the choice to begin with.
Sure.
God is not interested in you loving God if you didn't have the opportunity to tell God to go to hell.
Yep.
And at least consider the possibility of doing so.
Yep. It's true.
We, as a society, America, the United States of America, need to allow people to have the opportunity to do the wrong thing.
Yes.
When somebody does the wrong thing, when somebody does the wrong thing, realizes their mistake, and then decides that nobody else should be allowed to make the do the wrong thing again, that is wrong.
Exactly.
I am glad when a person who smoked decides that smoking was the wrong thing to do.
And quits. Yep.
I just get berserk when they think nobody else should be allowed to smoke.
Yeah, right.
Okay? That's the problem.
Yes,
all
it
right?
is.
I never smoked.
Good
you
for
may
you.
Have smoked and
yep.
then changed your mind and stopped. Okay? Here's the point. When the choice was there to be made, I made the choice not to.
Yes.
You made the choice to do so and then regretted it and changed.
Yep.
Okay? You cannot remove my choice because you made the wrong one.
Exactly.
Okay? When we restrict the freedoms and liberties of our fellow Americans so they cannot make the wrong choice, then in fact, we are the ones causing the problem.
Exactly.
Stop it.
I mean, one of the freedoms that we have is the freedom to fail. And if we don't have that freedom,
we have
we
no success.
That's one. But if we also don't have that freedom, we don't have any freedoms.
Don't have any freedoms. Absolutely correct.
Yep.
Absolutely correct. You know, and there's a whole host of situations like that that we're not going to go into tonight.
Yeah, because we're running out of time again.
There's a whole host of situations like that where conservatives want to stop people from making bad choices.
Yeah.
And that's not the appropriate way to do things.
What no,
we
it
want,
isn't.
We want people to make the right choices. But they have simply got to be, you simply have got to allow them to have the opportunity to make bad choices. That is, for you social conservatives, that is fundamental to God. He gave us the opportunity to reject Him.
Yep.
Okay? He did not take away that opportunity. Think about this. What would your love for God be if your only choice was to do so? It would be empty.
Yep.
God didn't want it that way. We as Americans don't want that in our lives in a secular way. 30 seconds. Do your shout out, dude.
Okay. All of my tweets. Just me, Pammy, an Arkansas traveler and Marine major, if you're listening. Glad you tuned in. Hope we gave you something to think about. Do your homework. Be looking at those various service organizations, veteran service organizations, and educate yourself.
Bill, have a good week.
You too, Tracy.
We'll talk.
Yeah.
Good night, everyone.
Night, all.
And we're into the green room for however long this green room
lasts. For however long it lasts. Jeez. Actually, I like that. Hopefully folks will in fact educate themselves.
Yeah, the discussion was abortion. It was somebody that had an abortion who regretted it, and I said, that's fine. I never did, and your desire to, end abortion, there was lots of other reasons to do so, lots of other reasons. But in this particular, her particular point was that the reason abortion had to be ended was because she did it and regretted it. And as far as I was concerned, that was absolutely the wrong approach for doing it.
And it's also the weakest approach.
Right. You can have lots of other reasons for doing so.
Yeah.
I said, but you don't take away my choice because you had the freedom to make that choice and for you chose badly.
Yeah, exactly.
Other people may choose, and while you may disagree, you may think that that was a bad choice, they might, over time, go, best choice I ever made in my life. You may not like that choice. You may think that that choice was really, really, really bad. But for that American, that person, that choice, they had the freedom to make that choice, and it was a good choice as far as they were concerned. Now, you can have all kinds of arguments about abortion for other reasons, but the fundamental idea that we need to take away choices because people can make bad choices is wrong.
It's just wrong. Yeah, just plain
wrong.
Yep. I agree.
And that's
well, and it's the weakest argument out there because it is so easily refuted.
Did I tell you that I almost got to the point of saying no to abortion?
No, you didn't tell me that.
I was working on my rights.
Yeah.
My book, and I was working on, a particular line of thinking, I reached a point, where I said, all right, is it conceivable for the fetus to have a right? And I almost, in this particular line of thinking, and I won't go into it because it actually took me about an hour to be able to get to this point.
Yeah.
And recreating it at this point, I'd have to go back and go through some of the notes that I wrote. In this particular line of thought, and at the time I thought, this is actually the line of thought most people are using, I can get to the fetus having a right. Following this particular line of reasoning, this particular line of thought, with this issue and this issue addressed, I could get to the point where the fetus has a right. I'm not saying what right, I'm just saying a right. Because once it has a right, that right has to be addressed in some way.
Well, once it has a right, it has the whole bundle of rights.
Well, that's correct, but in fact, that is what I'm following is a mathematical proof.
If
you can prove one instance,
right?
If you can prove N, if you can prove X, you can prove N,
right?
So my goal at this point was to be able to reach a point where a right could be assigned to the fetus. And I said, okay, with that particular line of thinking, I could get to the point where I could, in fact, assign a right to the fetus. Okay, now, before I do that, before I actually imprint upon that child that right, I have to make sure that I am not in the process taking away. Infringing is an entirely different animal. I can obtain a right. I can find a right that exists in the universe and take upon that onto me that right, even though that I know that its free exercise will in fact infringe on others, so there has to be structural restrictions to it. But that right would still exist. Okay? Even though that its free exercise would infringe on others. That's possible. Okay? In other words, the right is so expansive that it necessarily will bump into others. That's possible. Okay? My right to detonate a nuclear bomb, it's going to infringe upon other people.
Okay.
So I have to restrict the right to detonate a nuclear bomb to a very, 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 very small bomb. You know, two or three atoms. But I cannot take upon myself a right that removes a right from another. Okay. Does that make sense to you?
I'm following your argument.
You don't necessarily have to agree with it, but
I'm following your argument.
Okay. So I cannot take upon me a right that fundamentally withdraws it from you. Okay? Because then there's no structural way for me to restrict that right in a way that I could express it without eliminating your ability to exercise your rights. And I'll use an example. Okay? I have a right, me breathing here, okay, to my life. I cannot take, if we had between us, both of us having our hand on it, okay, the last cup of air that exists, okay, I cannot take into me that last cup of air if it means depriving you of it. Now, we can certainly fight and argue and share, but I can't, my taking on a right can't deprive you of a right. Okay?
I think that happens in the real world all the time. I'm just not coming up with the concrete example of it.
That's fine. And, in fact, that's my problem and where I stopped.
Ah, got it.
Okay, because, in fact, I can't put that right on to the child without, in fact, preventing the free exercise of the right of the mother. And so I ran into a little bit of a problem with that. But I want you to understand, and the point is not how I got to it, or any other parts about the aspects of there, other than the fact that I came really close.
Well, as a bit of trivia for that, and not looking to change any minds or anything like that with this, but are you aware that at 14 days they can measure brain waves in a fetus?
Sure.
I didn't know that before yesterday.
Once you have, let me rephrase. It's not brainwaves as you and I know it. It is an interaction between cells that is of a similar nature to brainwaves. It is a coherent expression of electrical charges between cells that obviously has some intent. It's not a spurious, random noise going on between the cells.
Mm-hmm.
It is a clearly organized set of electrical charges going on between the cells.
Okay. One observation that I will make on your attempt to make a mathematical proof.
Yeah.
And your dilemma then saying, okay, if I ascribe a right, it cannot be a right that takes away someone else's right. Did I
correct.
Say that accurately?
That's correct. You cannot ascribe to yourself
right.
a right that, on a fundamental level, the only operation thereof is the elimination of another person's right.
Doesn't that work in reverse?
No. Because it has to exist first.
Pardon me?
Because it has to, you, I understand, you hold the position that, in fact, it exists, that it's
yeah.
already there.
Right.
Okay? I don't, and on a proof basis, okay, I have to prove that the right is there, and, you know, if, in fact, the fetus has rights, okay,
mm-hmm.
And you know that I don't agree to that.
No,
but
I understand.
If, in fact, the fetus has right, then, in fact, then you're correct. It would work in reverse. Okay, but that premise has an assumption that I at this point have not
accepted.
The premise I don't agree with, but I also haven't proved. So, you take it on faith and belief, and you know.
Well, actually, no. I take it on the science, but that's fine. I don't need faith. I do not need a religious faith to recognize life. It isn't necessary for me to be a believer in any particular dogma or cult or sect or religion or anything else. I can base it entirely on science. And that's where I think you and I have the most fundamental disagreement.
Right. That's correct.
Because you aren't willing to recognize that science. Or at least you're not willing to ascribe life to it.
Correct. Because I believe that your definition of life and my definition of life in that realm sufficiently differ to create a problem with the premise.
Okay.
And
that's
fine. I mean, you know, I can take one cell out of my body, and that is life. That cell has life, and it exists. It will die shortly, because having been removed from the rest, it cannot survive by itself. But that cell is alive. You can look at it in a microscope and see it functioning and
yeah.
behaving and continuing to do all the things that cells do, you know, when they are alive. It is life. By all definitions of the term, if we found that cell on Mars, we would be jumping up and down and going, "Life! We found life!" Okay?
Yeah.
So we agree that on that premise, that is life. Okay? However, taking that cell out and laying it on the ground, it's not going to survive very long. It is not a life. And that is the distinction and the definition that you and I differ on, and
mm-hmm.
we'll continue yep. to differ on until both of us are standing in front of each other, either before the pearly gates or, you know, wherever, you know, we happen to be standing next to each other when there is no physical realm there.
There you go.
And you can go, aha! Or I can go, aha!
Uh-huh.
And if you go, aha, I'm in deep shit. Of course, if I go ha-ha, you're not in deep shit at all. So.
No, well, I'm in deep shit for other stuff. That's probably the least of my worries.
Well, we've talked about Robin Williams' What Dreams May Come, right?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
No? How the hell is that possible?
I have no idea. Are we talking about Robin Williams, a comedian?
Robin Williams, a comedian, did a movie called What Dreams May Come.
Huh. Yeah. Of course, I don't go to movies.
if you have the opportunity, go rent it or go see it on demand or something like that.
Yeah.
Get it at your neighborhood thing. If you want to know what Tracy thinks the afterlife is like, because, yes, Tracy does think that there is, in fact, an afterlife, because humanity, a human being, is, in fact, greater than the sum of our parts.
Okay.
Because it is clear that if I take all my arms and legs off, Tracy still exists. I can take half my brain out, and Tracy still exists. I can swap out my heart, my lungs, my liver, and virtually every other part of my body, and Tracy still exists.
Yep.
So,
yep.
God,
that gets metaphysical.
It does. So, if you want to understand what Tracy thinks of the afterlife, that is probably one of the best examples of how I think of the afterlife.
Okay. All
right. And
well, now you sufficiently piqued my curiosity. I'm going to have to go find the damn thing now.
there's actually a word for it. And the problem is, the first time I heard it and people explained it to me, I went, you guys are nuts. Okay. The word is called existentialism.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a philosophy in the real world,
yeah,
it is about as stupid a philosophy as you are ever going to walk into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And in the most basic sense, existentialism says that the table that we see before us exists only because we agree it exists. Okay?
Right.
Let me tell you
that was Jean-Paul Sartre, right?
Yeah, when you walk out of the room, I can guarantee you the table still there.
Still there.
Still there.
Yeah.
Doesn't require either one of us believing it's still there for it, in fact, to still be there.
And if you don't believe that, turn out all the lights in the room and then walk into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a person that has never been in that room that is blind walking into
the
room.
There you go.
What will happen when they hit that table?
Yeah,
they go
right
out.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
Now, but here's the funny thing. What happens if you remove the physical world when, in fact, all you have is energy? Then, in fact, existentialism might actually come into play, because then, you know, reality exists only at an energy level and only at a perceptual level, and, in fact, if you don't perceive it, it wouldn't exist.
Well, that's possible.
It's certainly possible.
I would caution that that's not the only possible outcome.
No. Yes, absolutely, positively.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting is existentialism as a real world philosophy is whole load of shit. It's stupid and ridiculous. However, in a non physical realm, in a pure energy realm, it certainly has something to offer as far as explanation is concerned.
Sure.
And it's certainly, you know, the reality is you and I are going to have this conversation once both of us are gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we'll have an idea of what is going on.
And then we'll have to see if we can agree on the cable, the table, the chairs, the cup, and the coffee.
Right, or Dr. Pepper,
maybe. Or
whatever,
right? Yeah. Some beverage of choice here. Yeah.
So, anyways, I strongly recommend the movie. It's very fun. It's very entertaining. It's very serious at some points. And it also deals with the concepts of, you know, suicide and, you know, what happens to people that actually. And, of course, my opinion is that if you don't believe in the afterlife and you're absolutely 100% convinced that, in fact, the afterlife doesn't happen, then, of course, when you die, there is no thought or idea to remain coherent, and so you simply cease to exist.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, if you are a inherently good person and the physical realm disappears, then your afterlife is going to have a certain goodness to it, and in fact, if you have a lot of people believing the afterlife is a certain way, there is going to be some significant amount of overlap between certain people. But of course, if you have an inherent...
Ooh, that's kind of almost a takeoff on Heinlein and his Fabulists.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And if you actually have a very dark soul, as I've been informed, if you have
well,
a really dark
he's
soul,
been
then in fact...
advised that somebody else had an opinion of that, yes.
Yeah. That in fact your afterlife is going to have a certain, shall we say, negative connotation to it.
Hmm.
So it's an interesting, thought-provoking movie. It's an enjoyable movie. It has
tell me the name of it again.
What Dreams May Come.
Ah, What Dreams May Come.
And
that
it
really
rings a
bell.
It has a very satisfying end.
Was there a... I mean, there's been a lot of books with dreams in the title, but I'm... Was that adapted, or was that always a movie?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
It had some interesting people in it. Cuba Gooding Jr. was in it.
Oh, cool.
Max von Sydow was in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting story, and like I said... It had a satisfying ending,
mm-hmm.
so it's not all dark and terrible and nightmarish, but it's all
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway,
oh, cool.
It's
okay.
A very good book, very good movie.
I will have to see if I can find it now.
The general point of all that is that we got to this argument about free will. About
mm-hmm.
That you have to have choice. You must have choice.
Yep. We don't disagree.
Take away choice, and we're in terrible situations.
And that's not a religious thing either.
No, but it actually informed my debate with the Muslim.
Well, sure.
Because, the argument she was making was, in fact, there are too many bad choices, and, the Quran gives the boundaries, and that was the word she used. Creates boundaries by which, their lives are guided. And I went, but it's a false boundary. You're removing the opportunities to do what's wrong, and she thought that was a perfectly wonderful thing, and I went... No, there is no freedom. There is no free will. There is no choice when you've removed all opportunities to make those choices.
Right. I mean, that's almost an Orwellian kind of turn there, when you can say these boundaries constitute freedom.
Which is exactly what she was saying.
Yeah, and it's like, well, okay, so. You just called the daytime night. Sorry. Doesn't work for me.
Right.
But then I wasn't brought up as a Muslim either.
Right, and that was my one of my final points to her was the simple fact that the illusion that you are concerned with is in fact that the restrictions you have so willingly taken upon yourself somehow apply to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
They don't. And I don't accept them, and so therefore, too bad for you.
Did she have a response to that?
No.
Okay.
She's carefully avoiding that,
okay.
Only except for the fact that...
because the Quran is pretty specific about what happens in that case.
Yeah, this is one of those places where, the conversation could easily, my intent with her was to present one and only one idea.
Uh-huh. Right.
In situations like this, I used to say this to, I had my time in my life when I was a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wasn't. And I did not want to create a situation where my thinking process, the thought process by which I left the Christian religion,
mm-hmm.
Creates a problem for other people.
Hmm. Okay.
My goal is not to disturb somebody else's faith.
No.
Not my goal. It's never my goal to disturb somebody else's faith. I want people to understand that I, in fact, have reached my position through the process of careful thought. I just didn't say, I want to do this. Christianity says I can't do that, so we'll screw Christianity. That has nothing to do with it. I actually thought about it, considered it, evaluated it, spent lots of time worrying about it, considering it, before making a decision, a conscious decision that I was done with.
Okay.
So, but as a Christian, and I have done it since, my argument to people has always been, people on a sinking ship will not necessarily jump off the ship just because it's sinking, unless you give them a reason that where they're jumping off to might in fact be better.
True.
You have to throw a life preserver out there in the water and say, this ship is going down, and if you stay on it, you're going to drown. But that life preserver offers you a chance at survival. As a Christian talking to non-Christians, I told people, there is a life preserver here, time for you to leave the sinking ship. But I also reversed that process just as quickly, going, religion is a sinking ship, time to get off. Well, the sinking ship has a great deal of comfort for people. People are extremely comfortable in their religions and their belief systems, and you're not going to get them to leave those belief systems unless you can give them something significant to show them that, in fact, there's something that they're leaving that's going to be better. However, sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes people don't believe they're on a sinking ship. Sometimes what you can do is you can open up a door and show them the water pouring in. And that's all you can do, is to let them realize that, in fact, they're on a sinking ship. And that's what I intended to do with her, is to create a single point that, she has an extremely well-established boundary system that is self-reinforcing. And
yes.
I understand that. Somebody deep in the religion, virtually everything self-reinforces itself.
Well, particularly in that one.
Particularly in that one, but I
mean, I'm fundamental... not saying it's exclusive to that. I'm just saying that, but
right.
That one is
really so, yeah.
Really?
really that way, yeah. And so, but I was also in a fundamentalist Christian environment, and that is self-reinforcing too.
I wouldn't suggest that it wasn't.
So, my goal for her was to create a single point, on that boundary, that in fact could not self-reinforce itself.
Mm-hmm.
That in fact, if the more time she spent thinking about it, the more it would be likely to open a fissure in that wall around her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that I wanted to do, is I wanted to, and it's scriptural, I wanted to plant a seed. that was the goal, is to find the right set of circumstances, the right thing that's going on in her life, and the right approach that allows me to leave that seed in what might be fertile ground. And as long as she can, as long as it sits there, if in fact over time she dwells upon it, it is going to be a self-reinforcing, growing seed that will be more and more difficult for her to build around.
Yeah. I mean, because
unless she takes it to somebody else and say, you know, destroy this for me because I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
But if she allows it to stay in herself and to and I'll use this term, fester, or grow, she will build a self-reinforcing wall around that concept.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually that concept works upon the other wall. Anyways,
yeah.
That is my approach for people like that. People either in the well into the Christian faith, well into, you know, the Muslim faith, well into Jehovah's Witnesses, well into the Mormon. My approach in those areas are exactly the same. I try to find out what it is, the one issue that they are most want me to be aware of. And in her particular case, it came down to this concept of boundaries and free will issues. And to try and plant a seed that is contradictory to everything that they stand for. But in fact, they can take because it seems to be harmless.
Mm-hmm. Well,
So that's why I don't get into the, you know, you stupid moron.
She's going to split
your throat if you try to do any, you know, not the person I want.
Hang out with a higher class of libs than I do. I got to tell you, because every time I get into a conversation one, the very first thing they do once I point out an error in thinking or in application, they want to change the subject. So we go on to the next subject. And once I do that a couple of times, all of a sudden it's name-calling and I'm a racist and I'm a homophobe and I'm an old man. Those are the three things that I typically get called.
Well, you know.
And it's kind of like, I thought we were having this conversation. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I probably get in one really good conversation for every four or five of those ones.
I got it. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well,
you know.
There could be hope then.
Yeah, and at the same token, you have a different, I'm certain. I think I know you at least enough at this point to suggest, you don't have the timeline outlook that I do.
I don't know. What's your timeline?
50 to, 80 years.
Oh, okay. No, I live in the moment.
And I don't.
Yeah, and that works for me. I love logic. And not the fake stuff that they teach in college. And when somebody presents me with a logical fallacy, then I think I'm supposed to say, that could be really nice, but here's why that doesn't work, and go on from there. I'm not planting seeds. I'm just saying, if you really believe that, here's why it doesn't work. So if you continue to believe that, you're only going to hurt yourself.
Right.